Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Maybe you've been thinking about therapy. You realize a therapist could help you work things out, but
I can't afford it. Therapy is expensive.
Talkspace is different. Talkspace is one of only a few online mental health providers that takes insurance. Average copays are only $15.
I can afford $15.
And most insured members pay nothing.
Nothing? No copays at all? With insurance, I could see a therapist and I might not have to pay anything out of pocket?
That's right. Nothing should stand in your way of getting support from a caring, licensed therapist. And if you don't have insurance, no problem. You can pay out of pocket for a lower cost than in-person therapy. And because you meet your therapist online, you can schedule appointments for whenever and wherever it's most comfortable for you.
Wow, I'm feeling better already.
You can pay for Talkspace with insurance or get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast, a compassionate guide for those seeking to heal and thrive. Introducing your host, Monique Coven, a certified trauma recovery coach and fellow traveler on the path to healing. In this podcast, we will engage in heartfelt conversation with experts in the field of trauma healing. We'll explore ways to cultivate feeling safe in our bodies and in connection to others, so that we can be present to live the life we've been given more fully and with more joy. Join us as we navigate the way towards a life restored. Introducing your host, Monique Coven.
Welcome, Christina.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited. I am a fan of yours. Even though my kids are older, I still would watch your stuff crack up because it's just so relatable. And I thank you for all of those laughs. Really, it makes life, when we watch the comedy about really relatable things, it just makes life softer. You know,
yeah.
I really appreciate that.
I rely on humor for my own sanity a lot.
Yeah. And you share that with others, which is just so, so awesome. So I recently read your newest book, which is a little bit different in that you're sharing what has happened within your own family with your son and your experience of him starting to show some signs of distress, and that's putting it really mildly. And your experience with the title of it is, I can fix this, because it's like that's how you started. And just going through how that impacted you, what you were seeing with him. So relatable on so many levels. As a mom, thinking if our child hurts, we hurt. But then the real feeling of like, this is bigger than I can take care of.
Yeah. Yeah. And realizing, and that's okay. It does not make me a bad, inadequate, stupid mom because I can't fix it. It just makes me human.
Yeah. Found it really interesting at the beginning. You talked about how you've always loved, you had a love for teenagers, and you talked about yourself as a teenager. And then you mentioned something that I think a lot of the audience can relate to, well, depending on the age, but how true it was that at the time that I grew up, or I was a very young mom and you were a teenager, if you had a mental health struggle, you did not talk about it because it was frowned upon.
Well, I didn't have the words to talk about it. You know, we were just like in the 80s and 90s, we were just considered screwed up teenagers that were going to grow out of it. Like, I didn't even have the words to say, hey, I think I might have anxiety. You know, like I didn't have the vocabulary because nobody talked about it. And whenever mental health struggles were brought up in any way, it was always like you thought of those movies where the people come, you know, in the white coats and they strap you down and they lock you up in a psychiatric hospital for the rest of your life because you're crazy. I mean, that was really the view we grew up with. At the time when I was growing up, you know, it's not that mental health struggles didn't exist. People just hid them, right? So when you would hear about somebody, you know, having unlived themselves, I don't like to say committed suicide because it sounds like an evil act that somebody does, and I don't believe that's what it is. When you hear about, you know, that, it was always thought of as selfish. You know what I mean? Like,
you're so right.
Especially if they have loved ones in their life. And oh my gosh, how selfish of them to hurt everybody. Nobody understood that to get to that point, you really are convinced that you would actually be doing people in your life a favor to them. So it was just so much ignorance and shame.
Totally. And yeah, I remember hearing that too and thinking those things too. But like you said, when you think about it, they're trying to be unselfish, thinking that they're maybe unburdening. But even, you know, in the beginning of your book, I was like listening to you, you know, and you had all of the things that we were taught to do when, let's say, a teenager is showing some, I don't want to say disrespect, but like not really following what you've asked for. And then there's like almost these, okay, well, I'll take away this from him. Like this whole set of what we learned that makes no sense now that we have a bigger picture.
Yeah, because, you know, the way I was raised, probably the way a lot of women my age were raised, was a good parent. Good parent sees a problem, they see rebellion or disrespect, breaking rules, whatever it is, and they immediately throw a consequence on that thing because we're going to nip that behavior in the bud. We are not going to raise entitled brats. You know, we were raised to look at kids who behaved in that way as bad kids,
yes,
right? And nobody actually took the time to go, hold on, what is the root of the problem? It was just throwing consequences on people. And, you know, when you're raised a certain way to believe that here's the definition of being a good parent, it's really hard to, and I'm going to use the word rebel for myself, to rebel against that brainwashing, right? And I write later on in the book how every time I've sort of gotten off that path of how I was taught, whether by the way I was raised or by, you know, culture or organized religion or whatever it is, right? Whenever I've decided, I'm gonna try my own path, still into my mid-30s, I sometimes feel like a disobedient little child. I sometimes feel like, really, Christina, you think you're smarter? You think you're smart enough to make your own decision on this when it's been done this way for decades? And that in itself tells you how powerful that was, the way we were raised and the way we were taught. It's so hard to, I think we're insecure. We deal with insecurities for the rest of our life. So I don't think it'll be different when I'm 80. But it's so hard to go, wait, I think I actually know better. And I'm actually going to do something completely opposite than what I was taught. And that's especially scary when your child is having suicidal ideation and really struggling, because it feels real risky and you're really questioning your intelligence and capability.
So important what you're saying. Wow. So yeah, there's like a battlefield going on with you. It's like, you know, you're starting to see that doesn't make sense and that's really not working or even helpful.
Yep.
Yeah. And the idea though of going outside of it is scary. Yeah. A lot of us feel like sometimes when we're doing something different than we've been programmed, or, you know, that we're little, that we feel that little child again, scared, we're doing it wrong.
Most of us, you know, if we really stopped We just really stopped and silenced all the noise, all the insecurities. Just really stopped and thought, okay, wait. Do I actually love and think it was brilliant the way I was taught and raised? Do I actually think it's brilliant and amazing and healthy the way society taught me to treat my children or any other structure power in my life? If we really stop, we're probably going to go, no, they really screwed up and they really didn't know what they were doing, right? So why are we trying to live up to these standards that ultimately we don't even really respect?
And they don't work. That's what I really appreciate. It was like just listening to you kind of go through that at the beginning with your son. And, you know, even as we're listening, we can see, you know, that's not what he needs. And you begin to get to really that place of seeing that there's a whole inside happening and starting to see with those eyes. But even having said that, just thinking about being in your place feels really, really scary.
It was awful. I mean, I've never experienced, I've been through some scary stuff in my life, in my childhood, and before I was a parent. And nothing was scarier than knowing my child was struggling and trying a million, literally feeling like, okay, and I have tried everything. I've tried everything. I've read the books. I've read the checklist. I can check off every single thing. I've done it all. Why is my son still contemplating suicide? Why is my son still numbing with drugs? Why won't my son get out of bed most days? Like, there's nothing worse because you feel completely helpless. And then, because we humans love to beat ourselves up, instead of just seeing it for what it is, we create a story around it, right? And the story is, I suck. I probably did a million things to cause this. I'm inadequate. If he had a different parent, they'd figure it out. If he had a different family, a different upbringing, right? We create this stuff to just make it so much harder.
Yeah, we do that. We do that.
And it's very good at that.
Yeah, it's hard to stop that. It really is. Yeah, I also remember you saying something about therapy and you said like, every baby should come into the world with a therapist.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did you manage when you got to that place where you were trying everything and you were just seeing that whatever you were doing was not really working? What happened after that?
I mean, it wasn't like, you know, I woke up one day and was like, okay, my stuff's not working. I'll try plan B. It was really such a gradual process of really learning a lot through support groups that I had attended with my son, learning through hearing from other families, which is why my son, who helped me write the book and he wrote the last chapter, why my son and I are so open about this, because the more we talk about it, the more less alone we feel. And just realizing the biggest epiphany I had was I have no control. I have no control over this. And so what do I have? What is within my control? And the only thing that's within my control, two things. One, how I treat myself throughout this, which is only going to help him. Because if I'm beating myself up, I'm not showing up as the healthiest parent to him. And two, I can control connecting with him. And so I write in the book how I realize that every interaction I have with my child, I can choose to either control or connect. I cannot do both. And by the way, I tested it out for all of you. You're welcome. You cannot do both at the same time. You have to choose. And that's when I decided, okay, you know, when something scary happens, when something new, whatever happens, that's or you know, we're not making any progress. How do I connect with my child right now? And part of it is as simple as listening. Part of it is as simple as not showing up with the energy of, oh my gosh, the world's falling apart with you and you can't do this and oh my gosh, right? And just showing up with curiosity. Sometimes it's that simple. I think so often we parents feel like we have to have the most brilliant solution and answer. And parenting is actually, in weird ways, simpler than that. We just need to come from a place of curiosity and listen and learn and accept that we're not supposed to know it all. We're not supposed to know it all. We're not supposed to know all the answers. If I ever met a parent who actually knew it all and had all the answers and knew how to make things better, I would think they were an alien. That would be weird. Like, that is weird, right? Normal. is not having all the answers, is not knowing. That is normal. And so I think just accepting that, my gosh, there's such a freedom in that. And then there's also, you know, a freedom for a child to just be who they are without worrying about mom constantly blaming herself for everything they're doing. Like, personal. We do that all the time. Personal. So just detaching my value and my worth and my identity from whatever is going on with him. That's the only way I can be a good support system for him.
So you must have had to have your own support system, because like you were saying, and when you talked about going in with that energy, what did you do with that energy? The fear. Yeah.
So again, support groups were huge for us. That's like the number one thing I would tell any family who has a child who's struggling is look up support groups in your area. If you can't find them, call the local mental health centers, call the pediatricians, call hospitals, call everybody, and just find a support group. Thankfully now with the internet, there are online support groups, but here's the thing. Healing doesn't happen in isolation. That is true for our children who are struggling, and it's true for us parents who are trying to support a loved one who is struggling. Healing does not happen in isolation. So I'm a big fan of therapy. I am in therapy. I don't know how I would have made it through this whole thing without therapy, but that is still in a way just me talking to somebody, right, who's really guiding me and helping me process things. But man, is it powerful to sit in a room with people who are like, hey, here's what I'm going through. Here's what I'm thinking. And you're going, my gosh, it's like they know my story. It's like they're in my head. That's what destroys shame. That's what helps us be more authentic. That's what helps us be more vulnerable. And healing requires vulnerability, authenticity, right? Community. When he was in he was hospitalized in a psychiatric hospital and then went straight from there to residential treatment center. And when he was leaving that place, they told us, you know what, he needs continued support. We're going to recommend some support groups. And those, I mean, were life-changing for both of us.
That is so good. Yeah, they say there's so much power in community. And when you're with people who can really, really relate, and as opposed to listening to someone who has no idea what you're going through, when you're with a group of people who get it, really get it, it must be so powerful.
And sometimes people will say, well, I do support. I have my friends. That's awesome. I love that for you. But also be very careful who is in your inner circle during your hardest times. Because if you have friends who are giving you all sorts of advice, if you have friends who don't get it, if you have friends who are shaming you or lecturing you, those are not your friends. Those are acquaintances that you happen to talk to. A friend is something very different. And a lot of people get so caught up with having so many different opinions and voices in their head that it just makes everything feel messier. And as someone who has walked through this with my child, it is freaking messy. It is so messy that you feel like you cannot think straight most days. I had days where I had a hard time forming a sentence. I felt like I was drunk. So many days, I literally felt like I was drunk. I felt like I couldn't think straight. I felt like I couldn't talk correctly. So if on top of that, all that stress, anxiety, worry, fear, on and on. If on top of that, you have people in your life who, oh my gosh, they're supportive and everything. But then they are adding to that mess. You know what? You need to shelf those friendships for later. And right now, you need to focus on people who are just going to support you. The best friends in my life, the most powerful friendships in my life at the time, just sat with me in my pain. They did not give me brilliant advice. Because you know what? There is no brilliant advice for this. They did not try to fix it. They didn't tell me, well, you need to be stricter. Well, have you tried this? Well, they didn't do any of that. Sometimes they would purchase a book and say, hey, I have no idea if this will be helpful, but I know it helped my friend. Maybe check it out. If not, you know, donate it, whatever. Just wanted to offer it. They would bring dinner. One time I read the book, how my son ran away from home and he was really suicidal at the time. And at that point, he had already been stealing to get drugs, to numb the depression. And he was in a bad place and he ran away. And we called the police. The police is looking for him. My husband's looking for him. I can't leave the house because my two younger kids are asleep, because this was in the middle of the night. And he's gone for hours. And my best friend, who has four children of her own, a full life, so much stress in her life, she shows up at my door. And she says, we don't need to talk. I could cry. You don't need to talk. I just want to sit with you. You don't have to talk. You don't have to do anything. We sat on my couch silently. I just cried and cried and cried. She didn't try to make it better, because there was no making it better. What actually made it better was just her sitting there.
That's right.
And she with me until, I don't know what time it was, 3 or 4 in the morning when my son finally came home. She just sat with me. Mm-hmm. So find people like that. And if you know someone who's struggling, be that person for them. We think we have to say the most brilliant thing or do the most brilliant. What's wrong? Just sit with them. You know, like do everything to make their life a little simpler. But they don't need you to try to fix it, because you can't. You don't have the power to.
And I think people get caught up in thinking, you know, I have to do something or I have to say something. But what you just shared is so powerful. It's like that just in healing in general, when we're going in, when we are experiencing pain. It's just having someone sit with us, even if they don't say anything, is the most powerful, because you just, you feel their presence. You're not alone. You're not alone at that moment.
This is what I think. Like, if my kid had a broken leg or had cancer or something, I don't think my friends would come over and go, okay, here's what we're going to do to heal cancer. Here's what you need to do. Or here's what you need to do to fix that broken leg. I'm going to tell you. If they do, they've lost their mind, right? Not do that. Treat mental health stuff the same way. You don't know how to fix it. So just be a comforting, non-judgmental, loving presence. Going through this, even with the best support system, going through trying to support a child through something so scary and serious is so lonely. Even with the best support system, it is so lonely, because there's a part of you that always feels like nobody truly gets it. Nobody truly knows what is going on in my head every second. The way I live in fear, the fact that I wake up multiple times in the middle of the night to check to make sure he's alive. Nobody really knows it, and it feels really lonely. But if you can somehow ease a little bit of that, then it's so powerful.
That's so, so good. So how is your son doing right now?
He's so much better. And we always, whenever either he or I answer people when they ask this, we always, because, you know, if anybody's followed me for even a day on social media, you know, I don't sugarcoat anything. We always like to say he's doing well today, because mental health is unpredictable. And the way he describes it, like I said, he wrote one of the chapters in our book, because I wanted people to hear from a mother. And then I thought, man, it would be so powerful to actually hear from the teen. And I asked him if he would do it. He's a really private person. He immediately said yes. He was like, let's help other families feel less alone. Anyway, the way he describes in his chapter, he says, for me, mental health feels kind of like a tug of war. Some days I feel like I'm winning, and some days I feel like I'm losing. But the difference now is that on the days when he feels like he's losing the war, he has the tools. He has gotten so much help and support that he has the tools, and he knows, this is what I need to do in order to get a little better. Mm-hmm. And so then it just comes down to making yourself do it, because it's really hard to freaking do anything, including get out of bed when you're really depressed.
Yeah.
So I think it's something we both think that it's probably something he's going to deal with for the rest of his life. But, you know, the more wins you have, which he has been having more wins, the more you're encouraged in the days that feel like you're losing, because you know what it feels like to win. You've been there. And so that's always encouraging.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
One of the beautiful things I was so touched by was that he knew, maybe not at the very beginning, but just the fact that you were always on his side. Like, that to me was, like, just so incredible, because so many of us have not had that experience when we've gone through stuff. We've gone through it alone. And just to know that you were there in his darkest times, always trying to
And I do want to say, for parents who might be listening to this, and they're like, no, my kid doesn't know. I'm honest. My kid thinks I hate him, or they hate me, or my kid thinks I'm against them. I just want him to be in trouble. And, oh, I'm making their life harder. All that stuff that a lot of teenagers, whether they're struggling with mental health or not, feel at times. He did think I was against him for a while. Now he looks back and he goes, I wasn't. But one thing he told me multiple times, and I think I'm pretty sure he even wrote in this chapter, is how when you're really struggling, when you're in a lot of pain, you take it out on the people who feel the sickest to you. He said, I know he wrote this in the chapter because I just remember. He said, I knew my mom would never leave me. So who, unfortunately, right? It's like a weird backwards compliment to us parents. Like, they feel so loved and safe, take all their stuff out on us, right? And, you know, I had to realize that when he was screaming at me, you know, at his worst, I hate you, you effing, I mean, he screamed awful things at me. That what he was really screaming was, Mom, I hate myself. And
yeah.
Please help me. And that, just having that perspective changes everything. It doesn't mean we tolerate verbal abuse. But if we can really understand what the words are, what the real words are, if we can learn that language, then we can provide them, again, help instead of just throwing a consequence their way. Okay. And now, yes, now he looks back and he's like, you had my back the entire time. Here's the other thing I want to say about that, just real fast. When we feel at our worst, when we are going through a deep depression and anxiety, ADHD, all the stuff you struggle with, and we're feeling worthless, a lot of times mental illness will make us feel worthless. It is really uncomfortable to feel loved because you don't feel worthy of the love. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes we will push people away, right? Because the love feels like, no, I'm not worthy of this. And I just had to keep showing up and showing up and showing up. I write in the book how one night I had to call the police on him, and my husband had to have him in like a hold so he wouldn't hurt himself or hurt us. And they're on the ground, and he's holding him. Luca was just like acting so awful and saying such awful things and grabbing glass that was on the floor and trying to cut himself and trying to cut us. Just like this awful, awful nightmare scene. And at that moment, as he's on the ground, I got down on the ground on this level and I just looked him in the eyes and I said, I love you. And he immediately spit right in my face. And I did not move. I just kept saying, I love you. And he kept spitting in my face. I just said, I love you.
Love.
Because I needed him to know that even at his lowest, even when he feels he is the most undeserving of any type of love, he is so loved. He is
so loved. So beautiful. You did such a beautiful job.
Well, I screwed up a lot too. Want to talk about that?
Did you think you might screw up
a lot too?
Oh, but you know, and this is where I'm going to kind of, if it's okay with you, connect it a little bit to your own upbringing, because you know, we come with our stuff when we adult, and so sometimes that shows up in our relationships with our children. We get triggered, and we're thinking it's the person in front of us, but it's actually bringing up stuff that's happened that reminds us of what happened in the past, and so. Did you feel like before this, you had a, you know, a good understanding of your own trauma that you were still holding, or did some of it really show up during this time?
You know, I thought I had done a pretty good job dealing with my stuff. And I had lots of ups and downs in life. I was sexually molested when I was little and held that a secret for a really long time, which created these awful nightmares and sort of amplified the trauma, right? Because I held it in instead of talking about it. And then when I was 12, a war started. I was born and raised in Croatia, in my country. And even though we got to leave and we got to be safe, unlike a lot of people there, obviously it's still a traumatizing, fear-filled thing for a kid. And then I went through a really bad divorce when my older two kids were little that left me, you know, on food stamps and sharing a small room with my kids, and me feeling worthless and my kids deserve better. You know, thinking my kids deserve better. So I went through all this stuff, right? And I got so much support and therapy and everything that I really thought I'd dealt with it. But here's the thing. When your child is struggling, all of a sudden it triggers And I know that word is overused, but I don't care. It triggers stuff within us that we didn't even realize were unhealed. And really trying to support my son made it so clear all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, over time, how many unhealed parts of myself I was bringing into parenting that were not helpful to either of us. So I think a lot of us think, yeah, I went through that awful thing, but I dealt with it. You know, I don't have fear about it anymore, or, you know, I don't get triggered when something, a conversation about that is brought up, or, you know, whatever. We sort of justify and we explain why we are no longer affected by it.
Mm-hmm.
Something happens often with our children.
Yeah.
Because that's where we're most vulnerable, right? Because that's who we love the most. And that's where we feel like we can't screw this up. We got to be perfect at this one thing, right? Something happens. And all of a sudden, it's like, I was only like 79% healed. That 21%, ooh, that's some strong, that might be the strongest stuff. Like, that might be the messiest stuff I still got to deal with. So, yeah, I actually realized after my son got better that I got worse. And I was like, what is wrong with me? Like, what is going on? My son's better. Our relationship is finally great. It was awful. He's doing great. He's got a job. He finished high school. He earned enough money to buy his own car, and he's still going to therapy, and he's thriving, and he's not numbing and using unhealthy, you know, coping mechanisms. And I'm worse. And what I realized is that it's kind of like when you clean your house. Like, let's say someone's coming over, right? And you're like, okay, I just got to clean the house just enough so it like looks like we're actually living a semi-healthy life here, right? And you things in drawers and move things, right? But really, there's so much that still needs to be unpacked and organized. And so I had to go back to therapy and open every freaking messy drawer and go through everything in my closet, emotional closet, and go, all right, we can't just deal with the surface level. Like, let's dig deep. Let's go through the whole freaking garage and open boxes. Been here since we moved in and I never opened, because a lot of times, not only do we bring unhealed parts of ourselves into parenting, but a lot of times the parenting stuff and the parenting stress and taking care of our children distracts us from actually having the energy or the time to really clearly see our stuff. And I'm still in therapy, and I think I will need it for the rest of my life.
Yep, join the club.
If you don't think you need therapy, that's your money.
Yeah, I was thinking when you were saying, you realized you needed to go for therapy. Like, okay, now things are okay with him. Now my stuff is coming. Even what we talked about at the beginning, the kinds of messages that we learned about parenting, about ourselves, about all of that shows up. And until we really confront, you know, that stuff, it continues to show up. So do you mind if I bring up, and only if you're comfortable, I heard you speak a little bit in an interview about your own upbringing and some of the you're working through, and I guess you're still working through it now. And from what I understand, you were brought up in a pretty strict, didn't really talk about emotions. You were supposed to feel this way, and this is how you feel. Anything outside of that was not really acceptable.
Yeah, so a lot of it actually came from, and I don't blame my parents for this. I blame some of the churches for this. You know, my parents had the best intentions, but I ended up attending churches and youth groups that really, I mean, talk about control, right? And this is the one and only way to think. And not only is it not okay to think any differently, but you should be scared of burning in hell. And so I grew up with a lot of fear, and I didn't even realize how that fear, because since then, and by the time my son started struggling, I had a completely different view of faith and all that. But I didn't realize how much that fear actually affected me. Because if you're raised, and again, not raised by my parents, but by the way, the church raised me to constantly fear that if you're not good enough, you're going to burn in hell. You know, Jesus is going to come down and he's going to take all the good people And that might mean even your parents, which means you're all by yourself here dealing with damnation. And like, that is a lot, right? So I didn't really realize until my son started struggling that I feel was very familiar emotion for me. It was familiar to me. And so it was comfortable to constantly live in fear, because what's familiar becomes comfortable.
Yes,
even if it's
yes, yes.
So it was my go-to emotion. It was never, okay, wait, maybe the worst won't happen. Like, maybe there's a chance the good thing will, like, there's a 50-50% chance, right? That a good thing or a bad thing could happen. No, it was always the absolute worst case scenario. Death, doom, you know, my mind would just go into this crazy, like, not even be able to see the positive. Okay, so you combine that, me being comfortable with fear, right? With the fact that in my eyes at the time, I didn't have all the answers because he was still sick. I couldn't fix it, right? Yeah. So there's something wrong with me. And if there's something wrong with me, and if I don't know how to, you know, lead him in the right path, I'm not perfect. Well, then I'm doomed also, right? I'm garbage. So again, this is not like something that I thought of like as I'm speaking now. It's all subconscious, right? It puts this pressure on you to be perfect at every decision you make and every thought you have, or else. And how in the world are you supposed to be able to do that anytime, even on the best day of the week, but especially when your child is struggling? I'm going to say this real fast. I don't believe all churches are like that. I don't, you know,
mm-hmm.
There are amazing churches that are doing great things and all that.
Yeah.
I've had some really bad experiences.
Yeah. And you're talking about what you experienced. And how is your relationship then now with your parents? Are they okay with that? Are you okay with them? Do you guys still have a good relationship?
I'm a long way, you know, a long way. They are very open-minded and they've always been people to grow and, you know, all that. So that's great. But also my mom, especially, she eventually, when I was older, decided to go back to school and to get her to study psychology, and she got her license as a marriage and family therapist. And so she's a person as far as like being able to talk about emotions and all of that. I mean, completely different. So I feel like if I was a kid now,
yeah,
you know, right? But I also feel that about my older kids. I often joke, I'm like, because I have my son that we were talking about earlier, he's 21, and then I have a 19-year-old daughter and I have a 10-year-old son from my second marriage. And I often say, man, Ari, my little one, he's getting a much better mom. Because I think that's true for all of us. We all grow, all we learn, you know. And so, yeah, I'm sure my older kids would say, man, if we had the mom you are now when we were little, things were a little better. I was very, very close with my grandmother, and she actually... And she's gone now. And to this day, I adore her when I think about her. But also, if I'm going to be completely honest, my gosh, so much of my fear came from her constantly worrying about my soul, you know, and my destiny and making sure that I wasn't going to end up in hell. Any of them raising their kids that way, regardless of what you believe, just trust me, it's not healthy. They're going to be calling you when they're 45 or sitting there 45 and going, shoot, that really screwed me up.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, it's completely based on fear.
Yeah. Fear and control. And think about that. What was my biggest issue when I was, you know, raising my child through mental health struggles? I have to be able to control this. And I live in constant fear. Those are the two things that I was taught. Organized religion in my life. I was, you know, everybody needs to be controlled. I mean, a lot of times organized religion, unhealthy kind, does end up being about control, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if I could have had less of both of those attitudes in my life raising my child, I would have done a healthier job.
Mm-hmm.
And he would have been way better if I wasn't operating from a place of control and fear.
And I will say, you know, I've met many people who are brought up in environments like that without religion. And they pass those on to their kids as well. So, yeah, it's we're learning so much. I mean, I've even said to I have twin girls. They're not girls anymore. They're women. And I've said to them, I apologize for actually what I learned back then was when, you know, your kid does something that is, quote unquote, you know, wrong or bad. As a toddler, you put them on the chair, not the chair. Yeah, the stairs of the chair, and have a timeout. Yeah, like isolate them. Isn't that good?
Yeah.
Like, you know, really? So I've apologized. I said, I'm so sorry. I didn't know any better. What you needed was like, you needed connection, not isolation. So
I did the same thing. I watched those TV shows that taught us how to be good parents. And it was all about them just sitting by themselves and getting to sit in their shame.
Yeah, sit in their shame. Let them think about what they did when actually their brains weren't even formed. It was probably all activation.
You know, every time we as adults screwed up, because we do every day, or, you know, even if we're, let's say we say something mean to somebody because none of us are perfect. Usually we take it out on our spouse or somebody. If every time somebody was like, okay, you are now going to sit by yourself. I just want you to go over and over and over and over again how awful you are and how awful what you did was. Okay, that's what I want you to do for the next 5 to 10 minutes. All right. I mean, this is like one of the only sentences that in both this book and the first book I wrote, because it's so important. And it's feeling like a loser has never helped anyone thrive in life. And I think about all the time. I think about it when I get too self-critical. I think about it when my child is not, you know, doing something against whatever we decided was okay. I always think, okay, feeling like a loser is only going to make you feel, you know, like more of a loser. It just amplifies it. Not going to help you thrive. So if we actually want to teach our kids something, if we actually want them to thrive, if we want ourselves to thrive and move forward and grow, then sitting in our shame is not going to do that. It's never going to work.
I love that. And I love that you, even in your little skits, you're always talking about self-compassion and those kinds of things. I told you I was cracking up at the one you put out today with the pots and pans, and you kept adding to it. And it just, we do that. We don't realize the harm that it's doing when we're already overloaded with our own stuff.
And the other thing I wrote in my book is I realized that by me constantly getting on my son about stuff, you know, you didn't do this and blah, 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 all that stuff. He was acting like he hated me. And it hit me one day, oh my gosh, all my annoying, nagging, it's making him hate me more. It's making him self more.
Wow. But amazing that you had that, like, amazing that you had that revelation, right?
Yeah. But I mean, it took me years. This is one thing I always, and usually I forget to say, but I always want to say in every interview. If you are doing any of the things that I mentioned, are not right, healthy, whatever you want to call them, I do not for one second want you to feel bad or guilty or like that is not the point, because every single one of us has screwed up so much. I always think it's as long as you genuinely care and genuinely love your child, you have nothing to feel guilty about. You're gonna screw up, gonna do the wrong thing. You're going to, because you're human. But so don't beat yourself up. There's a big difference between beating yourself up and holding yourself accountable, right? Mm-hmm. Beating yourself up is sitting in that chair and feeling ashamed. Yeah. And that's going to leave you stuck. Holding yourself accountable is going, oh, shoot. You know what? I just read this thing on a podcast and I've been doing that. I'm not going to do that anymore. I get it. I'm going to do better. Okay, moving forward. Not going to beat myself up over it. Glad I learned it. Very different attitude. So, you know, I think back and I'm like, gosh, do I wish that I had realized, or, I mean, I nagged that boy for years before it hit me that, oh, right, this is just adding to him hating himself. Do I wish I'd learned earlier? Yes. Am I going to beat myself up for it? No, I didn't know what I didn't know. Have I apologized to him? Of course I have. You'd never apologize to your child. I don't know. I don't know what's going on in your life. You must be really perfect.
See, again, that's like so, so contrary to anything we could ever imagine. Parents. Yeah. Saying they're sorry. What? You know, I think it's the most.
I made a video, I don't know when it was, where I mentioned, I know what it was. I wrote it in my first book, how the three words that might be just as important in your relationship with your child as I love you is I'm sorry. And I remember so many people were like, why would you show weakness like that?
weakness?
They thought it was weakness. And then, of course, I looked at their profile picture on Facebook. I'm like, okay, no offense, but you're from that other generation.
Yeah.
You know, nobody in their 30s and 40s was saying that. Because to me, apologizing to my child increases my power. It doesn't diminish it. It increases my power because it is showing them I'm human. And it shows that apologizing is strong, powerful, and it's love.
Yeah.
Right? And also, our job is to model for our children how to behave. And I want my child to be able to say, hey, I screwed up. I'm sorry.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for this conversation. It was wonderful. So your book is called I Can't Fix This. I really recommend this book. I couldn't put it down. And I right away told my friend, because I have a friend, we all have a friend, or we know someone, or someone knows someone who is going through this. This would be such a great help, just encouragement. And it was great to hear from your son as well. Really appreciated that. So thank you, Christina.
Thank you so much for having me.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.